Happy Thursday. Happy Groundhog's Day. How about that? Quite a movie. Adam Azer, Heath Cummings, Scott White. And Scott, you know, it is Groundhog's Day, but it's not going to be one of those things where we do the same thing day after day after day, because I actually have to be really nice to Heath today.
Really?
Yeah, because it's Take Your Kid to Work Day, and Heath's kid is at work and listening. He is, like, on the air right now, so.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought of that, too. Are we allowed to disrespect Heath in front of his child? Is this going to put ideas in Lucas's head?
This is the thing. He has two teenage siblings, so he has seen plenty of disrespecting me.
Well, yeah.
I think it's just Groundhog Day, by the way, Adam. Not
Groundhog's
Day.
It's not multiple.
It's not possessive. Just Groundhog Day.
It didn't sound right when I said it. It didn't sound right. Well, let's start the show over then. Happy Thursday and happy Groundhog Day, and let's talk fantasy baseball. We are going to talk about some post-hype sleepers. One of our CBSSports.com baseball writers, Mike Exisa, gave four post-hype sleepers. He borrowed a fantasy term and gave us some reasons why these guys could be better in 2016 after pretty rough 2017 rather, after rough 2016s. Talk about the Josh Bell news. We're looking for breakouts, digging deeper into the rankings. Who has a better chance of being a breakout? Devin Travis or Jonathan Scope? Yasmani Tomas or Yasiel Puig? Have some comparisons for you and some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Let's start with an email. Let's go to Matt from Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. That's not a real place, is it?
Hollidaysburg?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. And they always say this, if you want to make up a believable lie, make it so ridiculous that people think there's no way you made that up.
It's a real place. So Matt says, hey, Gregory, Andrew, and Starling. Those are Pirates outfielders. But he has a question about a Cardinals outfielder. You haven't talked about Stephen Piscotty. What is Piscotty's ceiling and floor?
You know, it's funny. Heath and I were actually talking about, a player I'm sure we're going to get to on this podcast, Josh Bell. And we were talking about prospects who were expected to develop power and never did. Because that's kind of the story on Bell. He should develop power. Piscotty is actually a good success story along those lines. Was not a guy who hit many home runs in the minors, but here in his first, I mean, basically from the time he arrived in the majors, he's been a pretty good power hitter, eclipsed 20 last year in his first full season. I don't know that I see him developing any more power beyond this or really developing in any other way. I think he's a fine mid-tier outfielder, somebody you'd be satisfied with your second outfield spot, be thrilled to get with your third outfield spot.
Yeah.
And that's about what he'll stay.
I would say I don't see a lot of risk with him, but he does have a little bit of upside just in the fact that for most of his minor league career, he struck out at closer to the 10 to 12% range. And his first 900 plate appearances in the majors, that's obviously gone up a little bit, but that's not really that surprising for getting used to the major leagues. If he's even around 15% strikeout rate, then he's probably a regular 300 hitter. And if he's a 300 hitter and he hits in the middle of that Cardinals lineup all year, the 86 runs and 85 RBI he had last year seem a little bit low. So I would not be surprised if in the next year or two, Stephen Piscotty has a season where he hits 300, scores 90 runs, and drives in 100.
Okay, Piscotty was the number 19 outfielder in points leagues last year. He was number 25 in Roto. Better in points because he hit 35 doubles. That's my speculation anyway. And he just wasn't a standout in any particular category. 273, 22 home runs, 85 runs, 85 RBIs, excuse me. And, so he right now is the number 32 outfielder in the consensus rankings across the industry. And I find every time he's drafted in one of our drafts, I'm like, oh, that was a nice pick, because it's usually, like, I don't know, round 11 or so, and yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe it's a third outfielder, just someone you kind of feel safe with.
Oh. Yeah, I think if he's going to be drafted as the number 32 outfielder, then he's an excellent value every time he's taken. I've got him 22nd in points and right around 25th in Roto.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the consensus rankings, and I just have to say, off topic here, Jose Bautista is potentially going to be one of the best draft values. Like, he is the 29th ranked outfielder in the consensus rankings. I got him in the 6th round in our head-to-head points draft last week. Like, I'm banking on a better year from Jose Bautista than last year, a much better year, and I think he's going to be tremendous value for fantasy owners.
Well, it depends what site you're drafting on, maybe, because I think we were looking at this yesterday, and the three of us, meaning Heath, Chris, and I, are the three highest in the industry, that at least that Fantasy Pros has recorded so far, on Jose Bautista, me being the highest, actually.
Okay.
I don't disagree with you. I guess, like, he still has a ceiling of a borderline number one outfielder.
Yes.
But you just have to realize that his floor is exceptionally low.
Well,
but
that's him getting injured.
It's injury risk and the idea that, you know, a lot of players at 36, 37 years old fall off a cliff.
But I'm not sure he did last year. He was worse.
No, I don't. Last year.
Right. Okay.
But we could have seen the beginning signs last year.
His in points leagues, his per game production was 14th among outfielders, which, you know, is borderline number one. Obviously, I have to use per game because he was injured for part of the year. And it's also worth noting Fantasy Pros rankings are strictly roto, where he wouldn't be as valuable because he wouldn't benefit from the walks he gets. And he's never been a great hitter for average. So, yeah. For him to really, really measure up in Roto, he needs to rank among the league leaders in home runs. And that, I'm less confident in that than that he'll still be like a real life solid OPS guy.
Yeah.
So I am more confident drafting him in points leagues than Roto.
Or you'd be more confident drafting him in an OBP league than just a batting average league.
Sure. Yes.
He's kind of a higher variance Carlos Santana, I guess.
Okay.
I think he could be better. I think he could be worse.
All right, so that's Jose Bautista. And one thing that I think we've gotten better at the last couple of years is identifying players who get drafted earlier or later on other websites than CBS and how that could really alter your strategy if you listen to our podcast and, you know, you're crazy and you don't play on CBS. We can help you out a lot in that regard. So as we do, you know, drafts on other websites, we'll keep you posted. Okay. Email of the day number two. And I think, you know, I'm going to try to read a lot of emails and while we can now before we start the position previews. So, you know, that explains. Email of the day number two is from Kevin. It says, Dear Ryan, Jamarcus, and Tim.
Ryan Leaf, Jamarcus Russell, and Tim Couch.
Booyah. I am trying to wrap my head around how the new 10-day disabled list will affect the fantasy world. I think it is going to have a bigger impact than we realize, and that we will be seeing a lot of pitchers keep their innings in check by being placed on the 10-day DL for minor issues. I really fear teams utilizing it down the stretch. How do you see the 10-day DL impacting fantasy, and can you think of any ways to approach the potential problem?
I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think it'll actually be a good thing because they would limit the pitcher's innings anyway. It just might not be without a lot of forewarning. So you might end up starting a guy, if you play in a weekly league who doesn't, you know, and just taking a zero for that week. Also, they're actually putting them in the DL spot, then those leagues where you have injury slots, you can stash the guy there and pick up a new player as opposed to just putting the guy on your bench. That to me, it seems like a pretty good thing.
I'm curious, and we had a lot of questions coming into football season this year about how they were going to manage the new injury protocols and reporting, and that wasn't as big a deal as we thought it was going to be. This probably won't be either, but I think there's a possibility we do see more players going on the DL than we used to. Teams may use it in this way, and it may be a situation where we're looking at going into next year after we have a year's worth of data where it might make sense in some leagues. Your league could combat that by just adding an extra DL spot.
Yeah, it starts with down the stretch. Remember, in September, with the call-ups, players don't really go on the DL. So,
right.
I don't think that's going to change anything necessarily.
And there's nothing more frustrating in fantasy than not knowing than a player being day to day and you not really knowing when he's going to come back.
Right.
And, you know, it being the start of a new week and you just have to make, you flip a coin basically whether or not to start this guy. If more players with, less than severe injuries are going on the DL, like that's just clarity. I think it's helpful.
Sure. Especially if you have DL slots. And last email here was from Bobby, email of the day number 3. He says, "Dear Adam," that's me, "I agree 100% on your country music take. A few years back, I moved from Boston to the Midwest, living in both Rapid City, South Dakota, and Omaha, Nebraska. While I liked country type living, I did not like country music. I worked with people who loved it and would play it all 40 hours of my work week. Here is what I learned. All country music exists with these themes. The farm, the truck, the girl, the Lord, alcoholic beverage, family, this country. I dare you to find a popular country song without those themes, Heath."
Johnny Cash, One Piece at a Time. It's about working at a factory and stealing a car one piece at a time and then putting it together at home.
Well, isn't that about the truck?
No, it's a car.
Factory could, I mean, Johnny Cash has a lot of songs like that.
Okay.
Blue collar employment.
Okay, well, yeah, I just appreciated the support from Bobby. Now, on to baseball. Josh Bell is going to miss 2 to 4 weeks after left knee surgery. His status for opening day is uncertain. Give me your fantasy take on the Pirates first baseman Josh Bell and his injury.
This sucks.
Does it? I mean, 2 to 4 weeks.
It's not a big deal, but February. He was a borderline draftable player in a standard league.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have been influenced by his performance in spring training. That spring training performance is going to be limited now. We've talked in the past.
It will be. 2 to 4 weeks. That's he'll be ready for the start of spring training.
But they said his availability for opening day is in question.
Four weeks from now is March.
They're playing it. That's the cautious way of phrasing it. But I you know,
it is
2 to 4 weeks. He could be ready to go theoretically, like when hitters report. It may be a little later than that. We may not see him play in an actual game till mid March. But unless there's a setback, like I don't think this adds enough risk to him that now you can't invest a late round pick in him.
No, I just wanted more information. I think we're going to get less information now.
Yeah, I like Josh Bell a lot. I haven't seen anybody, I don't think, draft him in a mixed league other than me. And I've only done it in points leagues because the plate discipline's so good. Actually, one of 3 hitters with at least 150 at-bats last year who had more walks than strikeouts. Josh Bell was one of 3. And if he develops the kind of power a lot of scouts still think he will, that's a high ceiling. That's a very high ceiling. And I'd like to gamble on it late. Healthy knee, surgically repaired knee or not.
Hey, Heath, can I get your son, Lucas, to make fun of you for the way you say the word influenced?
Yes.
Okay, because, yeah, I mean...
I will... I can get him on air by the end of the podcast to make fun of the Yankees and the Braves both.
Lucas doesn't want to go on this podcast.
Lucas has done everything he can so far to not put a headset on, so I think, like... parenting podcast moment for a second... Take your kid to work day is not a free day out of school. You're supposed to go with your parents, learn what they do, and have a life experience.
Yeah, it's not about coming. He's lucky. His take your kid to work day is a lot more fun than most people's take your kid to work day.
It's not about sitting there and playing on your Kindle for 8 hours. You need to participate in the environment, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, we'll make sure he's on the podcast before it's over here.
Good. I'm glad we can influence him in a particular way. Some more news and notes. The Cubs acquired pitcher Eddie Butler from Colorado. Kind of, you know, let's see.
Really?
Yeah.
This is breaking news to me.
It happened yesterday, and I tried to talk to you about it, and I couldn't remember which Rockies pitcher they acquired, so I just dropped it. When we were talking about Mike Montgomery?
Eddie Butler, not... big prospect just last year. And, you know, I wrote him off because he pitched for the Rockies. And, you know, you basically have to be a John Gray level talent for me to pay attention to you in that case. But, I mean, Cubs, you get Chris Bosio working on him with the stuff he has. That could be interesting. Okay. I don't think there's a spot for him, but
not yet.
One opens up midseason.
St. Louis signed Carlos Martinez to a 5-year, $51 million deal in his first year of arbitration. So this is the biggest contract ever for a pitcher in his first year of arbitration. And, you know, contracts just get bigger and bigger. But Colorado signed Mark Reynolds to a minor league deal. Does it make you nervous at all about Ian Desmond and his, you know, because if he can't play, if he can't defensively handle first base, maybe they turn to Mark Reynolds.
No.
Okay. Okay, I mean, I've been laughing.
Like, I giggled at the idea of somebody not being able to defensively handle first base.
Oh, God, don't be like, that is a caveman's approach to baseball.
I'm pretty sure with a month's worth of spring training that you could play first base.
Adequately, maybe. Well, not necessarily.
Scott?
What's that?
Adam Azer, first baseman?
At the major league level?
1 month's worth of training.
No.
He's not tall enough. It's a problem.
So
it's too many balls over your head.
By the way, he hit 282, 356, 450 baseball with Colorado last year, Mark Reynolds. So
yeah, he did. It was weird.
It was weird.
Because, like, big time power hitter everywhere but Colorado, but he really changed his swing. And so I think the gains in batting average were legit, but I'm just not sure for fantasy purposes it's a worthy trade off.
I think the bigger concern would maybe be for David Dole. I could see them putting Desmond in the outfield, playing Reynolds at first against lefties.
Yeah. You know, it's not even for sure Dahl is an everyday outfielder. Gerardo Parra, I think he was playing with bone spurs in his ankles all last year, and he got a pretty big deal from the Rockies last offseason, so they may want to give him another crack. I really hope not. I mean, I don't know what Dahl has to do to earn his way in the lineup, but it seems like it's less than certain.
Oh my gosh, I just came up with a great team name. I'm going to type it to Heath because it's more visual.
Okay.
What do you think?
That is, I think, maybe the best team name you've ever come up with.
All right, I got to type it to Scott. I'm going to type it to Scott. Hold on.
This is compelling radio here.
It's not radio.
What do you think, Scott?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes, that's outstanding.
That's great.
Isn't that really that good?
It's really good.
Say it.
All right, we got the Goo Goo Dolls, Dahls. Yes.
I like it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It only took like 2 years and 3 sports for you to get me to like one of these dumb teams.
It's not even a Tuesday. Baltimore agreed to a minor league deal with infielder Johnny Giavitella. Now, Mike Exesa's post-hype sleepers. He gave us 4. He wrote article, well, not specifically us. He gave you, the baseball community, 4. He wrote reasons for all of them, like the pitchers I thought were kind of interesting. But the first one, you know, well, I'm going to look at the whole group. Michael Conforto, Jose Berríos, Byron Buxton, Luis Severino. Obviously, Mike knows this. We know this. Conforto has big-time playing time issues here because they've got a crowded outfield. But of these 4, Conforto, Berríos, Buxton, and Severino, how about ranking them in, you know, post-type sleeper ability here? Like, how would you rank them if you going to give their chances to bounce back and break and, you know, be a sleeper like we thought they'd be?
I'll go with the hitters first. Conforto, Buxton, Berríos, Severino.
You think Conforto over Buxton?
No, I would take Buxton first.
I've seen Conforto do good things in the major leagues.
Well, we just saw Buxton.
Yeah, Conforto seemed a little bit more sustainable since Buxton was still striking out like half of the time.
Not quite that often, a third of the time. But it was, Buxton, let's just put it this way. Buxton's on my sleepers list, and none of these other players are. So Severino's probably the one I give the second best chance to. I don't think he's really done anything that would really cause me to worry. I feel like it's just typical growing pains for him. It's Berríos and Conforto that I'm not sure. Like, I'm not really sure what's wrong with them, but something does seem to be wrong with them.
Yeah, well, I thought what was interesting about what Mike wrote about Berríos, the Twins pitcher, and Severino was that Berríos may have been tipping his pitches. There's some talk about that. And there's, you know, proof that Severino, his release point, he was tipping his pitches. His release point was quite different for his fastball, his changeup, and his slider. So if it's just mechanics for both of them, that's pretty encouraging. What's discouraging is that Berríos was historically bad. He had an 8.02 ERA, and just reading straight from Mike Exese's story, here is the full list of pitchers to have an 8 ERA in at least 50 innings during their MLB debut season. Jose Berríos, Greg Reynolds, Dennis Tankersley, Micah Bowie, and Herman Bessie. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And none of them were good. Like, none of
that
them had long,
debut
big...
season?
What's that?
That was in their debut season?
Yes. None of the four guys before Berríos went on to have long, big careers. So, for what that's worth.
Though, Roy Halladay in his third season had a 10.64 ERA.
Okay, that's a good example.
That's, yeah. Yeah, you cite the mechanics thing as a positive, and that, I guess that's one way of looking at it. That's, mechanics can be changed, of course. In Berríos' case, though, I remember it being described as an overhaul, which seems pretty dramatic for a prospect as high-end as him, and one who put up the kind of numbers he did in the minors. I mean, this time last year, Jose Berríos was looking like the pitcher who was going to have the pitching prospect who was going to have the easiest time transitioning to the majors. And you look at his numbers at AAA just last year, 2.51 ERA, 0.99 WHIP, 10.1 strikeouts per nine innings. I mean, those are ace caliber numbers. If he needs an overhaul, like if they're overhauling him, I just wonder. I don't know. I wonder if it's too much too soon. If it's a panic move.
It seems like a bad sign. I agree.
Yeah.
Do you draft any of these guys? Berríos, Severino, Conforto, Buxton?
Well, Buxton for sure. I'm actually trying to draft Buxton late everywhere I can. But the others are not really on my mixed league radar.
I might draft Buxton you're not drafting Roto in a standard points league, are you?
As a bench player, yeah, I think that's, if you're going to draft a hitter late in a points league, it needs to be one with the upside Buxton has. So yes, I think in our most recent one I did, I drafted both him and Yasiel Puig late.
Okay. Would you rather, well, who would you prefer, Puig or Buxton?
I prefer Buxton. Since we've kind of danced around the issue, here's my take on Buxton. Comes up to the majors, you know, has several stints in the majors, and it just looks completely useless in all of them. Finally comes up September, most recent stint, and he hits like 9 home runs. I mean, and knowing that he was recently the top prospect in baseball, you know, in that conversation 2 years running, like if he's cleared the hurdle of I can succeed against major league pitching, then I'm willing to give him a pass on the strikeout rate, and I'm willing to think that there's improvement to come all around and that he can still potentially live up to that high ceiling.
Okay. Buxton, after being called up, hit .277 in September with 7 home runs, 18 RBIs, scored 19 runs, stole 1 base in 2 attempts. And he had 5 doubles, too, in the month. And 2 triples. So it wasn't just the 7 home runs. That's 14 extra base hits in a month. Pretty good.
I exaggerated with 9. It was a lot, though.
It was a lot.
A lot for a month.
You said like 9, I think. So
yeah.
Seven is like 9, right, Heath? It's just, it doesn't have the full circle at the top of the number, if you just think about.
I was just looking at his game logs, and I do agree that what he did gives me some hope for him this year. 5 of those home runs came against the White Sox.
Those White Sox.
Which pitchers did he hit it off? Because I'm always skeptical of September numbers.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, were these teams that were even trying? I don't have all of the pitchers that he hit them against.
I can find it.
But
game shields 5 times.
He hit 5. No, it was 5 different games. but yeah, he played 7 games against the White Sox and hit 5 home runs.
Here are the pitchers he homered off of in September.
Wait a second. It's not sorted by that. Yeah. Yeah. Here are the pitchers he homered off of in September. Jose Quintana.
There we go.
James Shields.
Yeah.
Anthony Renato. Kelvin Herrera.
Ooh.
Danny Salazar.
Ooh.
Hansel Robles. Justin Verlander.
I am perfectly fine with what he did in September. It's impressive.
One more. Chris Sale.
What?
Chris Sale as well. Yep.
Dude, this is impressive stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad we did that.
Yeah, me too. By the way, how many home runs do you think James Shields allowed last year? Do you know?
36,
38,
32. 40.
Whoa.
How on earth do you give up 40 home runs? Wow.
That's something.
Oh boy. Okay. Let's talk about, searching for breakouts. I went a little deeper in the rankings and this guy or this guy, this guy or this guy, that kind of deal. But first, hey, Scott, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Do you want me to go with my heart or my head?
Your head.
It's not the same one. It's not the same answer. So, I mean, what's the line right now? Do you know what the line is?
It's been three. Somebody
told me last week it was something ridiculous like 14, which seemed absurd.
What?
Three seems perfectly fair.
It's three.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a game.
It will be a game.
Yeah, they'll play.
If I was a betting man, I would put money on the Patriots. Definitely not a sure thing, though.
And I think Lucas actually is ready and has his Super Bowl pick as well.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you to Scott for teaching Lucas about gambling. Good stuff. Take a good work day. Is Lucas ready to go on the air and give a Super Bowl pick?
Yeah, he's got it ready. He's gonna just talk loud and tell us who's gonna win the Super Bowl.
Okay, Lucas, take it away.
Patriots.
Patriots, what's the score gonna be?
34-31.
Who's going to be the best hitter in baseball this year, Lorenzo Cain or Salvador Perez?
Those are the only two choices, apparently.
Yes. Well, obviously. Salvador?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's no pitcher better than Danny Duffy, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the Braves are going to lose 100 games?
Yes.
Okay. And the Yankees are terrible?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Good job,
Lucas.
Fine contributions.
Did he say 34-31?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is the... Is this the highest over-under in Super Bowl history? Do you know, Heath?
I don't know. I don't generally participate in those gambling-type activities.
No. No. I don't know why I even asked.
I'm not like Scott White. Lucas is getting a strange impression of this podcast, isn't he? Where Scott White is the one with no scruples?
I predicted on the football podcast yesterday that it would be Patriots, like 28-24, 27-23, something like that. So, Heath, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the Falcons winning 34-17.
Now you make me appear faithless.
34-17 Falcons.
You are, guys.
There's no chance that happens.
Shame.
That's not your real pick.
I know for sure if I was a Falcons fan, I would believe in my team. But 34-17 Falcons, I just don't see any way the Patriots can stop all the weapons they have, the Falcons have on offense. And the Falcons' defense has been much improved.
It has. I mean, it's true. Was anybody expecting them to win by the margin they did over the Seahawks, to win by the margin they did over the Packers? I mean, neither of those was really a contest. Yep. So
nobody's really given the Falcons a game.
I thought they'd have a pretty easy time with the Packers. I know that sounds easy to say in retrospect, but that's actually the way I felt at the time. I don't feel that way going into this game. So, and my default stance when one of my teams is playing in a big game is, okay, they're going to lose.
Right, right.
So, I'm back to that after the departure in the NFC Championship game.
All right, last thing here. We'll talk baseball. What are your Super Bowl plans? It really, for me, it changes if the Giants are in. Like, I cannot watch with a lot of people. I can't do it. So what are your plans?
I don't like watching it with a lot of people anyway, but definitely not with one of my teams. It's the weirdest thing when you watch a game with it's like a gathering. Like, you don't even realize you're not paying attention to the game, and suddenly it's like the middle of the second quarter, and you're like, what's been happening?
Yeah.
Like, that's annoying.
I'm always one of the like four people on the couch the entire time watching the game. So.
Yeah.
What do you do with the Chiefs?
Watch the
game. You just accidentally don't because there's too much going on around you.
Too much food. Heath, what do you do when the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl?
Well, for the clinching game of the 2015 World Series, I went to a Packers bar on Monday night when there was a Packers game. And we watched the game in a place with like 75 TVs. And the TV by our table was the only one turned to the Royals game, World Series, because everybody else was watching the Packers game.
Okay.
That's a funny story, actually, because Lucas was on an airplane with his mom, and they were flying back from Missouri. And she got really mad at me that night because we sat there at the bar. We drove to this bar because it was closer to the airport than our house. And I called an Uber for her to go pick her up from the airport because it was in the middle of the World Series. She didn't think that was acceptable.
I would have done the same thing. Same thing. So, who has a better chance to break out this year, Devin Travis or Jonathan Scope? And I will say this. Travis averaged .636 fantasy points per plate appearance. Scope averaged .634 fantasy points per plate appearance. Scope probably better a lot. You would think better in Roto. But anyway, Devin Travis or Jonathan Scope, who has a better chance to break out this year?
Well, I'm not sure. We didn't see Scope break out last year, so maybe by default.
That's a good point.
I'll say Travis, though I don't know that his upside is so high. Like, I don't know that he's ever going to measure up to, like, the, you know, Rube Neto Dor class of second baseman. Maybe he could push, like, the DJ LeMahieu's of the world, but
I think the thing that would really make the big difference for Travis is, like, there's an expectation that he may lead off. If he leads off in front of Donaldson, Bautista, Morales, and plays a full season as a 300 hitter that he's been so far, then I don't know. We should expect him to score a lot of runs. The power numbers are a little surprising. That ISO went down last year, and I'd expect that to be more of the norm. But I could see a situation where he hits 300 with 15 home runs and 15 stolen bases and scores 110 runs.
Yeah, he was kind of doing that before the shoulder injury his rookie season 2015, and that was mostly as a leadoff hitter. He led off in most of August and September last year, and hit those were his best 2 months. His best 2 months in terms of batting average.
So Devin Travis we're talking about.
Yeah, I would say Devin Travis, but only because I like his situation of hitting leadoff in front. He's going to get a ton of good pitches to hit in front of Donaldson.
Yeah, I want to take a look at the top second baseman and see the home runs. You know, like Jonathan Scope had the sixth most home runs at the position and the fifth most doubles, and it really is a home run position now. If you don't hit 20, you're going to have a tough time really, really breaking out, I guess. But
I just, like, especially with Scope, he played 162 games last year.
Yeah, he did.
To get to 25 home runs, 82 runs, and 82 RBI. He had a 298 on base percentage, and that was like 15 points higher than his career mark.
Yeah, he cut down the strikeouts from like 25% to about 21%. But I feel like a lot of that was early because he got pretty bad late in the year.
I'd say he's the worst plate discipline guy at the position, but Rube Neto Dor was pretty bad in that regard too. It's just I don't know that Scope can be more than a 25 homer.
I don't know that he can be anything more than he was last year. Like,
yeah,
last year
exactly.
Was peak Scope.
Right. I feel like that's the case too.
Okay. And the last thing I'll say though, just a knock on Travis is last year, for whatever it's worth, there was no top six second baseman with less than 20 home runs. Pedroia was seventh in points and like 10th in Roto. LeMahieu was about eighth in points, ninth in Roto. Those guys did not hit 20 home runs. So, okay. Next one. Better chance of breaking out. Again, I'm going to get a little blowback on the term breakout. But better chance of having a big year, Yasmani Tomas or Yasiel Puig?
If you're asking better chance, then it's 100% Yasmani Tomas. If you're asking breakout in terms of be a lot better than they were last year, then it's Puig, because Puig was awful and Tomas was good. Like, so.
I'm not just thinking about last year, though.
But what, like, I really expect Yasmani Tomas to be better than Yasiel Puig.
You do?
Well, I guess, obviously Tomas is the safer pick. And in, you know, if he just does what he did last year in Roto, 30 home runs, everybody can make use of those. But he's so, he's kind of an outfield version of Jonathan Scope, actually, like so limited with his plate discipline that it really brings down his ceiling to a point that he's always going to be just a fringy starter in mixed leagues.
The weird thing for me with Tomas, and I want to see what happens in 2017. But after 2015, it looked like, well, there's no way he's a 270 hitter because that 354 BABIP is not sustainable. And then after 2016, it looks like there's no way he's a 30 home run hitter because that 25% home run to fly ball rate is not sustainable.
I'll give him a chance of repeating what he did last year. I'm just saying, I'm not sure it's good enough for anybody to get excited about him.
No, well.
Tomas?
If you believe that Yasmani Tomas has, which I think there were some people that wrongly believed he'd shown us all that he was last year, and he did something new in 2016. Tomas still has less than 1,000 plate appearances in the major leagues. Tomas is still just 26 years old.
This is so unlike you, though. Why are you going out on this limb for Yasmani Tomas of all players when usually you're the guy who's like, oh, what the numbers say? He is.
I think that's usually Chris Towers that says that for younger players. And Tomas, 26 isn't that young, except for the fact that he's just played, again, he has less than 1,000 plate appearances. This is kind of the argument I was making for Gregory Polanco last year. He's probably shown us what he is. But if what that is an 800 OPS, that's pretty good.
Did anybody have Polanco in their breakouts?
Last year?
No, this year.
I did last year.
Because I still think you could put him in there this year, because he really had a bad second half. I believe he was playing with an injury, Polanco.
You know, it's funny. He was like one of my last cuts last year, and he was one of my last cuts this year.
For the breakout column?
Yeah, I just come up with enough guys that I like more that he just kind of gets squeezed out. But I mean, that doesn't make him not a breakout candidate. It's just you have to draw the line somewhere. You're writing about half the league.
Like, I don't think he's going. The difference between this year and last year for me, well, one is instead of saying, like I just said with Tomas, he's got less than 1,000 plate appearances, he could still improve. Now it's another season worth of data that is different in some ways, but similar in a lot.
He wasn't healthy in the second half last year, though. I mean,
and he was terrible. Looking at the numbers now, pre All-Star break, 287, 362, 500 with 12 home runs, 9 steals in 82 games. So
pre All-Star break, he was looking like a top 12 outfielder, and I was kicking myself for leaving him off my breakout list.
Then he hit 220 in the second half. This is Gregory Polanco. I think he could put it together and have like a 25-25 season.
That's possible. But I also don't think you're drafting him at any type of discount at all, because everybody thinks, well, he was just hurt in the second half.
Okay. Well, let's see the consensus rankings.
Fair point.
No, that is a good point.
He's definitely a consensus top 20 outfielder.
18th. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a pretty good rank. But like Christian Yelich going ahead of Gregory Polanco, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, that's one I don't agree with.
I've got those two back to back.
Really?
I have them back to back also, but I do have Polanco ahead. I think the overall ceiling is higher.
And then McCutchen going ahead of Gregory Polanco is interesting.
I think McCutchen going ahead of Gregory Polanco is absolutely warranted.
Yeah, that's fine. I could see it going either way for sure. And they're back to back in the consensus rankings. So
are they?
Yeah.
I think I've got McCutchen 5 spots higher. Okay. A lot of things with him. He did get worse last year, but how much worse he actually was peripherally was pretty exaggerated. I think the run and RBI totals will bounce back. The home run totals are basically the same. The average is going to bounce back.
He was so different his last 50 games, too.
Yeah, he had 850 OPS in the last 2 months.
And that the walk-to-strikeout ratio was basically 1-to-1, and that was what was the most skewed for him early on.
He just can't get back to that top five outfielder range because he's not running like he used to.
That's Andrew McCutchen. All right, next up, who's more likely to break out, Jameson Taillon or Marcus Stroman?
This changed last night for me.
Really? Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
We were having a discussion on Twitter, and there was somebody had put a question out there, who will be better this year? And I could find it, but I'd probably take too long. It was James Paxton, Danny Duffy, or Marcus Stroman. And I picked Duffy, and then I responded that I picked Duffy. The answer is probably Paxton, and I've never believed in Stroman. Kind of thought that was the end of it. About an hour and a half later, Marcus Stroman likes the tweet saying, I don't believe in him. So he has to go on the breakouts list now. I'm obviously motivating Marcus Stroman.
That's awesome. That's great.
The funny thing is, like, I didn't even put, I've never believed in Marcus Stroman. Yes. I just said, I've never believed in Stroman. So he's not just searching for his first and last name. He's searching solely just for Stroman.
Stroman's not a terribly common name, is it? If my last name was Stroman, I might just search for Stroman too. You're more likely to get hits. But that's funny. What's interesting about Stroman is strikeout rate really took off last couple months last year. And
he pitched a lot worse.
Did he pitch a lot worse?
I think his numbers went the opposite direction, which we saw with a lot of pitchers last year. Really doing well on the strikeout numbers.
Final 11 starts for Stroman, 3.28 ERA, and he had nearly a strikeout per inning.
Yeah, he seemed to turn a corner. He became a must start in the last couple months.
Yeah, he's extreme ground ball pitcher. The BABIP was exactly where it should be during those 11 starts. Ground ball pitchers tend not to be big bat missers, so it's hard for them to really compete with the high end pitchers in fantasy. But if you find one who is at least like an 8 strikeouts per 9 guy, like Dallas Keuchel has been at his best, and like Stroman was down the stretch last year, then I think they're in that discussion. I'm not as bullish on Stroman as some other people, because there was a pretty long history of him not being a strikeout pitcher before
Scott,
that.
Yeah, Scott, can I interject here? I'm looking at the game log. You probably are too. It's really the month of August, and 2 starts against the Astros. He struck out 21 batters in 13 and a third in those 2 starts. In September, Stroman in 37 innings struck out 26 batters.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you can use the last 11 starts, but you can also look at like the last 8 starts when he was not very good at all.
Well, but look at the swinging strike totals compared to earlier in the year. Even in September, those were higher.
Yes, that's true. They were. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not the one making the case for Marcus Stroman breakout, but I understand.
Taillon or Stroman?
Who's more likely to break out? Well, I mean, probably Stroman. I think Taillon's pretty good as he is.
Yeah, I'm going to say Stroman, and I think the Keuchel, you threw Keuchel in there.
Yeah.
And I never thought Keuchel was as good as he was in his best season. But pitchers with that type of profile do have a greater range of possibilities, because some of it's based on good BABIP luck. Some of it's based on, like, all you have to do is strike out 8 per 9 and throw a ton of innings and win a bunch of games. And Stroman definitely fits that profile to where he could win 20 games, throw 220 innings, and be fine.
What's
Adam's
so funny,
proposing
Scott?
Team names on.
Yeah,
team
names
on G-Chat
no,
again.
That's, we're back to being awful again.
I like it.
You don't like
I
it?
I love it.
Stroman on the old banjo. Love it.
I came up with one for my dynasty team in Scott's Dynasty League you might like or you might hate. You should say you hate it just because of the way I treat your names.
Okay, go ahead.
Snell's like Martin Spirit.
I think it's better if it's just Snell's like Teen Spirit, personally.
You're wrong.
Yeah, well, no, I kind of agree. I think sounds a little strained compared to the two Adams proposed this podcast.
Stroman on the old banjo.
Yeah, like strumming on the old banjo.
It rolls off the tongue easier than Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Right. I think Smells Like Teen Spirit is great. So.
And what's also difficult about Smells Like Teen Spirit is, you know, I guess depending on what your background is, your brain hears that as Martin when you're just reading through it.
Yeah.
And obviously then the pun doesn't work.
It's a fail. Fail.
Well, no.
No, it's a fail. Don't let him off the hook.
I just don't know that it's superior to Stroman on the old banjo.
It's not.
Anyway, I picked Marcus Stroman because he can throw 230 innings and win a bunch of games on a good team, and that's fine.
Over Tyone?
Yeah.
I kind of like Tyone.
What's that?
Hey, Tyone had a pretty damn good rookie season.
Yeah.
I think, anyway. 17 walks in 104 innings. That's awesome.
That's very good.
338 ERA. Okay. Dansby Swanson or Jose Peraza, more likely to break out?
Oh, man. I don't...
Yeah, it's pretty... I am the low guy on Dansby Swanson, but I still think it's pretty easily Swanson because he has a place to play.
Oh, Peraza's going to play a lot. He can play anywhere.
But I think we could get a half a season of Peraza playing 4 to 5 days a week.
Is Peraza, does he have a chance to be anything more than just a steal specialist?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, if we're, you know, depending on how we're defining breakouts here, Swanson, I think, could be a top five shortstop someday. Peraza is a player I love, he's on my sleepers list. I love drafting him in roto leagues this year, but it's more because he meets a specific need than because I feel like the ceiling is exceptionally high. So, for that reason, I'll say Swanson, but I like both of these players this year. Swanson's on my breakout list. Peraza's on my sleepers list.
I'll say Tim Anderson.
I'd be more likely to draft Peraza in a roto league, probably more likely to draft Swanson in a points league.
Okay. Dansby Samsonite is going to be one of my team names. I know I've already said that one, but I have to remember it because it's good.
You got to think about that one a little.
But when you realize what it is, it's just right. It's tremendous.
It's pretty good. I you know what I think would put that team name over the top is the logo. You need to get the logo right.
What logo would it be? The Samsonite logo?
I mean, Lloyd Christmas looking at the briefcase, oh, okay. Right? If you okay. Find an image of that.
Yeah.
Like that.
Hey, I've got a potential shortstop breakout that you guys are not talking about. Where do you think I'm going with this one?
Orlando Arcia?
No. I think more obvious to me.
Oh, okay.
Gleyber Torres.
No. Didi Gregorius.
Didi.
I think,
how can he get better than he was last year? Nobody thought he'd even sniff 20 home runs.
Well, that's the thing. He's gotten better every year. Well, I mean, technically his rookie year he had a 704 OPS, but after that, 653, 688, 751. He hit lefties so well last year. That was the big knock on Didi Gregorius. And I just think, Scott, you kind of talked about it with players who are really good defensively. It takes them a while. He's so.
Well, I think there's a base athleticism there that can end up translating.
That's
into
what I was going to say. He is a really, really good athlete. I'd like to see I'd like to see Gregorius get like 15 steals. And what I really would like to see is him hit top of the order, because I think he's got a chance to be one of the best hitters on, unfortunately, a pretty bad lineup. I'm just saying, keep an eye on it. I think he's a guy you draft maybe in quarter infield, maybe, that's got a chance, because he was like a top 15 shortstop last year. I think he's got a chance to be like top 10. I think there's a pretty low ceiling, but I think he's got a chance to be top 10.
I'll say this for him. I think his chances of repeating a 20-homer season are better than Brandon Crawford's are. Crawford, obviously, now more than a year removed from his 20-homer season, didn't repeat it last year. I actually rank Gregorius one spot ahead of Brandon Crawford, which some people might find surprising.
I maybe that's true just because Yankee Stadium does matter that much. But he had a 24% hard contact rate. He was not good.
No, he was good.
He is not good.
He is good.
You will have no regrets if you don't draft him.
I might agree with that, but...
Like, just let him be.
In a deeper league, I think he could really pay off.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we got to start talking about deeper leagues a little bit more.
He just hit... Beauty Grigorius just hit his head on his ceiling, and now he's reeling back down.
I just think he's getting better as a player. That's all. He is emerging a little bit.
I think Grigorius had a very fortunate season.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Heath Cummings. Well, let's finish off with some emails. A little confession.
Confession?
I ran out of time and did not put emails in the notes. So I'm going to just read them straight from the inbox. So,
this is the worst.
Yeah, I know. It's tough.
All right. I'm getting Control F ready. Going to the inbox and getting Control F ready.
All right. This one is from Zach. It says podcast riddle.
Okay.
Got it?
Yep.
Okay. Who is the best fantasy keeper? Keep forever. Pick two in a roto league. So pick two. Springer, Posey, Story, I have Correa, Will Myers, David Dahl, Yoan Moncada, Alex Bregman, John Lester. Springer, Posey, Story, Myers, Dahl, Moncada, Bregman, Lester.
Springer for sure.
Well, I was going to say Posey for sure.
Then there you go.
Yeah. No, I think so. It's only two, so there's a lot of turnover happening here. I think just who are proven.
Well, there
stuff.
Is turnover, but it's an eight-keeper league because he's already keeping six.
Oh, okay. It changes it a little, but I mean, Springer and Posey, they're in the prime of their lives and they're early round picks already. So why get cute with it?
I have trouble passing up Bregman.
Can we do some trivia real quick? Do we have time for that?
Yeah.
There were five qualified, and I put qualified in air quotes, hitters that had a hard contact rate lower than Didi Gregorius in 2016 when he had his power breakout. Only five in all of baseball.
There's no way I'm going to be able to guess all five.
Just think of the worst hitters in baseball.
Okay, so you're telling me that Didi Gregorius is one of the six worst hitters in baseball?
He was in terms of creating hard contact, he was the sixth worst.
Is that the only measure of a baseball player?
It's not, but I thought you might like to know the names. Angel Pagan?
Pretty good.
Alexi Ramirez?
Not good.
Jose Iglesias?
Not good.
Alcides Escobar?
Not good.
And Ender Inciarte?
Not terrible.
Pretty good. Two of those are pretty good hitters.
None of those guys we're talking about drafting.
If you want to just look at the numbers. But again, like I'm trying to give you a little context here. He's a very, very, very good athlete. There is some speed there. His biggest problem was that he couldn't hit lefties. He crushed lefties last year. It'll probably come down a little bit, but
I would submit
he's
that
getting
he did
better.
Not crush anything with a 24% hard contact rate. Crush might be the wrong verb to use.
I would also say playing a full 153 games and only 82 strikeouts and only 19 walks, like he's making as much contact as anybody. So if more of those are weak, like if a higher percentage of those are weak, like,
right?
I can't figure out how to put it into words, but you follow how the math works. Right?
Yes. I mean, the more contact you make, if you're not a power hitter, the more chances you have of making weak contact. Yeah, but well, I'm just saying the guy is getting better. I'm trying to give a little context here. It's not always about the numbers, you know. Peripherals.
Sure.
He was a top 15 shortstop last year. Does that not count for anything?
No, it does count for something. I'm just saying that maybe some of the peripherals might suggest that he's not as good as a top 15 shortstop.
No, it's very possible. So I think he was actually 13th in Roto. It's pretty impressive. Stuff that in your...
We have spent so much time on Didi Gregorius, but...
Hey, yeah. Man.
Yes, we have.
It was a good... Okay. Over shortstop.
Just a couple more emails here to finish it off. This is from Tyler. I'm so conflicted. Back and forth. Who am I going to keep? My keepers, I feel, that are obvious are Altuve, Goldschmidt, and Machado, and Sale. So, one spot left in a head-to-head points league. No penalty. Jake Arrieta, Charlie Blackmon, Corey Seager, David Price, or Yu Darvish?
That is a lot of good choices.
Who were his keepers he was already keeping?
Altuve, Goldschmidt, and Machado, and Sale. He's got... You don't have to keep Sale if you prefer like Price and Arrieta or whatever.
But. I would definitely keep Sale.
Okay. So he's got three first-round picks and Chris Sale. And now he can keep one of the following. Arrieta, Blackman, Corey Seager, Price, Darvish.
I don't see how you can get rid of Corey Seager.
See,
I mean, I know yeah. Machado, he's got Machado filling shortstop now, but who knows how long, like.
He can move Machado to third.
Machado's not any older than Seager is.
And who knows how long Machado's going to have shortstop eligibility. Like, in Seager, you're getting a franchise shortstop for as long as you want. And,
yeah.
It was him
or Blackman for me.
Well, Blackman's interesting because he doesn't have an outfielder yet, and that's like the top lightest position, maybe. And then if it was a roto league, obviously Blackman could give him steals, but it's not. It's a points league. I think I'd keep Seager. Like, I would be okay with giving up Sale for Blackman, I think, but I don't think I could give up Seager for Blackman.
If this was just for this year, I would keep Blackman. But for forever, I would keep Seager.
Finally, Todd in Braintree, Massachusetts, which I'm going to guess is normal, is a real place, says, please tell me that Francisco Lindor is great. Tell me that a 15-homer, 19-steal guy is worth keeping. Maybe tell me that I can expect even better from Francisco Lindor. Just tell me he's not going to hit 285 with 12 homers and 13 steals this year. Can you do that for me? I'm keeping him. Don't try to stop me.
He's no Didi Gregorius.
No, clearly no.
I don't know what skepticism would exist over Lindor at this point. I mean, he's done it twice in a row now.
Yep. I he's a top five shortstop.
Yeah, he was number six last year.
He's a top five shortstop.
Like that's I think last year is his baseline. And I would say going into his age 23 season, I'd give him a better chance of exceeding it than falling short of it.
Fellas, have a great weekend. Scott, good luck. Big Sunday for you, my man.
Thank you, Adam. It'll be nerve-wracking. Nerve-wracking Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, at least eat some good food.
I'll eat some nachos and some chicken wings. I think that's on the menu.
Okay. Good stuff. Yeah. Heath?
Yeah.
Have fun with Lucas today. I hope he has a very good learning experience.
We're going to do some very important things. We're going to put him on set and shoot some video.
Nice.
He's going to write an article.
All right.
He's been tweeting out some thoughts. I may have him tweet about the Yankees for a little bit.
Some Didi Gregorius tweets. Okay, that's it for us. For Heath Cummings and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.